again and welcome to the second episode of 2024 of Musings on Golf. I'm Kelly Elbin, and today, along with my co-host Bob Bupka, you're going to hear a whole lot from the incomparable Gary McCord. We'll also talk Tiger Woods without Nike. Yes, it's true. And Chris Kirk gets the win at the Century to kick off the 2024 PGA Tour campaign. Bob, no Tiger anymore with Nike, but what a big win for Chris Kirk, and what a guest, what a conversation we had with Gary McCord.
Boy, our listeners are going to really enjoy listening to Gary. He is so sharp-witted. He doesn't pull any punches. He tells it exactly like it is, and I enjoyed his work all along, and I certainly enjoyed his appearance with us on Musings on Golf. You mentioned the name Chris Kirk. He came away with $3.6 million by winning out at Century. But let me say this, and I mean this sincerely. The biggest winners last week certainly were the people of Maui, specifically Lahaina, that lovely village that was obliterated with that fire this past summer. 150 employees of the Plantation Golf Course lost their home in that fire, including the superintendent of the golf course. And Century really has stepped up big. They've made a commitment not only this year, but next year and the year after and the year after that to really get Lahaina back to what it was. It has been a special place for Janice and I for 23 years. We went out there covering that event. Fell in love with the little village, fell in love with the people. So happy that it's now a big-time event, a signature event on the PGA Tour. So we got a good one. Second week already in 2024. Boy, that time flies.
Yeah, the first elevated event and a terrific field to start 2024. But I'm glad you mentioned that, Bob. And I saw and viewers saw so much from the likes of Colin Morikawa and other PGA Tour players, Ricky Fowler wearing the L on his cap for Lahaina, and it all the good that they're trying to do to help, as you said, people who really were ravaged and are trying just to get their lives back together. Golf can serve so much good in so many ways, can't it?
It really can. And speaking of good, hats off to our friend Kevin Kisner. Made his debut on NBC television up in the booth and did a real solid job. You know, it's not easy first time out of the box, but I thought Kis brought a lot of insight to the telecast, and he's going to try it again out at the one in Waste Management in Phoenix. That's going to be a lot of fun for Kis. That tournament's fun for anybody to broadcast. But Kevin Kisner, good job, my friend, right out of the box.
Yeah, Bob, totally agree. And I thought Kis was Kis, and it resonated well, at least for the first weekend. He was also, I know he was scheduled for Saturday and Sunday, but he kicked it off Friday evening, a little primetime action for him. I thought he was just terrific. And maybe he's the guy. We're going to see. You know, the stories, the online feedback, very, very positive about Kevin. So good luck to him. He starts action on the golf course this week at the Sony on Oahu. Hey, Bob, I mentioned it earlier, but a reign of from the very start of his career of Tiger Woods always wearing Nike. It's going to be so strange not to see him wearing Nike cap, Nike shirt. He made about $500 million, by the way, through that arrangement. Pretty good, but it's just going to be so strange not to see him.
Well, if Tiger made $500 million, you can imagine what Phil Knight and Nike made. They had to make more than that. They knew what they were doing right from the get-go. I think it's been a marvelous relationship. Nike, Tiger, they go hand in hand. But, you know, 27 years, Tiger's making a move. It's going to be strange, you say, seeing Tiger in anything but a Nike swoosh. How about seeing my man Jason Day wearing those baggy pants? He's made a wardrobe change. I'm sure the dollars were big, and boy, good to see him playing good golf again too.
Hey, isn't that the truth? And I'm sure we'll get used to it as will he. Yeah, he's played well. Bob, you referenced earlier Chris Kirk's win at the Century, held off a really strong field, low scores as were to be expected. Hey, Bob, it was his first win in 7 years on the PGA Tour. It meant a lot to him, as you hear from this.
It's never easy playing Sunday with a lead, but it's kind of easier a little bit mentally when you know, like, all right, I'm in the lead, but I probably won't be by the time I tee off. And then, you know, if I make three pars in a row, I'm definitely not going to be anymore. And so you got to keep the pedal to the metal.
Pretty amazing the way he performed, and certainly serves. We mentioned the inspiration the people of Lahaina got from the Century Tournament. You know, Chris Kirk had that personal battle with alcohol, left the tour for quite a while, got his life back in shape, two lovely children, a wife that he says is responsible for everything good that's happening to him. One of the real good, feel-good stories of 2024, and it's the first one. And boy, oh boy, Kelly, after all the negative stories we had to go through in 2023, maybe this is a good sign. We're kicking off the year with a real feel-good story.
Yeah, and that carries over to this week at the Sony Open. Gary Woodland, Bob, terrific guy. Obviously won the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, very popular among his peers, underwent brain surgery in September. Son of a gun, if he isn't back and ready to tee it up this week at the Sony Open. Gary talked to the media earlier today. Here's what he had to say.
This week will be a big week. I can hit every golf shot I want right now physically. Can my brain sustain the 7 days of tournament golf? You know, it's different playing with my buddies back home at Pine Tree to come out here and play against the guys on tours. Obviously a whole nother animal, but can I get back to the focus and energy and stuff I'm accustomed since I've been on tour? Can that come back? So, and if it's not this week, can I adjust? Can I go home and practice and adjust and work on that focus stuff? But obviously I'm in the major championships. I'm not in the signature designated events, so I'll need some help getting in those, but I plan on playing a full schedule. I plan on being competitive very quickly. Like I said, physically, I can hit any shot I want, and that's not going to be the problem. So I'm looking forward to being back and looking forward to where I'm at and expecting to be ready very soon.
Remarkable, Bob. You know Gary, long hitter, straight shooter, good player. And Will Zalatoris also coming back this week. He's been dealing with a back surgery that he had last spring. He did play in that Hero World Challenge, but in terms of being ready to go and playing in a PGA Tour event, great stories with both Gary and Will.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary Woodland, one of the real good guys out there, and I always kidded him. When you watch Gary Woodland walk, let's say walking up to the green, he always reminded me of somebody that had about a 10-shot lead, and they were walking up to the 18th hole. He doesn't really walk. He's got a little sachet, as I like to say it. He's got this little glide. Well, great basketball player, too. So super athlete, super guy, and we're wishing him super luck at Sony.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Bob, I took part in a something I've never done before. I play some fantasy football and have done so for a while, but through my buddy Cabell Fouché, which, by the way, is one of the great names ever that one could say. Cabell hooked me into a PGA Tour draft, and along with some other guys last week at a big dinner in outside of D.C., although I was on the phone long distance. And it was kind of like being in the war room. We had the first pick overall, five players on the team. We took Scottie Scheffler to begin with. Later on, we took Tony Finau, Sahith Theegala, and then Ben Ahn and the young Pearson Cootie at the end. So we finished one shot out of victory in week one. But based on the voluminous emails and texts that go back and forth from these guys, wondering how much work they actually get done. But it's going to be a lot of fun this year.
Well, certainly something the PGA Tour is encouraging.
Yep.
you know, they've done a 360 or 180, I guess, be more accurate. You know, for so many years when we were out there, I would mention that we would have a potential golf resort that had a casino and wanted to be our sponsor. And, oh, no gambling on the PGA Tour. Well, that's all been eliminated, and now it's a main source of income. You did mention already how you did on your draft, finishing one shot out. Pretty good right out of the box, Kelly.
Yeah, pretty good. Thigala, almost, if he had ended up winning, it would have won us the big money for week one, which is not very much, but it sounds big. But it's one of those things, Bob. It's more fun than anything else, and it keeps you going as the year goes on. Speaking of going, Gary McCord, our guest today, what a great long run he had at CBS Sports. I know it didn't end the way that he wanted it to, as happens in the TV business. But he was a lot of fun to talk to. Man, I was really impressed, Bob, with him, and our listeners will hear it. Funny guy, yeah, but man, he's right on top of things. He's very opinionated about what's going on, certainly with LIV Golf and the tour. I really enjoyed our conversation. I think he has so much to offer, and he cares very much about the game.
No, he really does. And he was a player, a longtime broadcaster. His perception of things is going to be something that I guarantee you our listeners are going to enjoy. Gary McCord, what a special guest he really was.
And you're going to hear from Gary McCord right after this. William & Harry has launched a line of stylish waterproof golf shoes, and they are incredibly comfortable. The WH golf shoe is made of deerskin and suede. It has a gel insert, a form-fitting inner lining, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside of each shoe provide maximum performance. It's time to elevate your game. It's time to go to williamandharry.com.
You flew the trap on 6. You birdied 12 and 13. You closed out the match 4-3. From your numbers to your windows, everything was dialed. That was yesterday. Outperform your best. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. You know, Bob, since 2020, the coverage of golf on CBS Sports has simply not been the same without Gary McCord. The good news is that he carries on today with a lively video podcast with another former CBS colleague. And the great news, quite honestly, is that he's with us here today. Gary McCord, thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf. How are you?
How are you guys doing?
Could not be better.
Well, Gary, we have a lot to cover here, past and present, and possibly take a little look into the future. Let's start with the present. You and Peter Costas look like you're having a blast on your podcast.
Yeah, we just, we both got not renewed, let's say, in 2019, I think. You just kind of sit back and see what you're going to do. I did some radio work for Sirius, and Peter was kind of doing nothing. And, there's no money or anything. You got to have some fun and do something and give them your 2 cents at, the four people watching. So that's kind of what it was. Nothing more than that. Just have a ball and we kind of make up stuff and would just go with it and see what happens. So it's nothing. It's probably cathartic more than anything. For two old guys that used to be on television for 100 years and kind of get back and, think somebody's watching it be on television again. That's kind of what it is.
Hey, Gary, let me ask you, were you always funny and quick-witted? I mean, like in high school, did you have people laughing at the things you said and when you went to college or did this great sense of humor manifest itself once you started with CBS?
Well, it was twofold. I grew up in Garden Grove, California. I went to Garden Grove High School. This is back when everybody was watching Ozzie and Harriet on television. There was white picket fences everywhere, and everything was clean. Everything was in order, and the universe was perfect. And so I go to this high school, and there's a guy there that's the head of the drama class, and he's also the head cheerleader. And this is 1964. And I'm watching this guy, and I'm going, this guy was flat out nuts. And then I watched him, he worked at Disneyland as a close-up magician on the bridge that goes over to Fantasyland. And I'd go over there and watch him do his close-up stuff. And one day I'm watching Johnny Carson, and also this guy comes out with an arrow through his head and balloon animal hats. And I went, oh, my God, that's him. So I went to school with Steve Martin.
I'll be damned.
Wow. I saw Steve Martin up close and personal when he was in high school learning the banjo from a guy named Charlie McEwen, Mini Gritty Dirt Band.
Yeah, sounds school. Right.
So Charlie, now he's a big guy with a beard and everything else. And he was teaching him how to play the guitar in the senior quad. I was a freshman. I couldn't go to the senior quad. But they'd be sitting there picking. And then he ended up at Knott's Berry Farm, Steve Martin, and Disneyland doing his stuff. And then, you know, and he was brilliant. I mean, in high school. So it's the first guy I've ever seen that was different. And I went, that's kind of fun. That's kind of fun. And then when I went to start playing the tour with inadequate fundamentals and the drive, the only way without going to some institution where they have really tight jackets, the only way to get through it was to laugh at yourself. I mean, literally, you better do something. You can't sit there and take it seriously or something's gonna happen that just kind of start laughing at everything, you know, of the idiocy of this game and what it does to you and everything else. So that, I think those two combinations, Steve Martin kind of gave me the pathway that's different. I became a close-up magician like he did. But anyway, so those two paths, I think, in my idiocy, maybe that was a soil that grew to flower. I don't
know. You know, Gary, you mentioned the word idiotic. I can't help but believe that that's probably the best word to describe the world of professional golf now. I mean, John Rahm leaving the PGA Tour for LIV Golf. And what did you think when you heard Greg Norman talk about Rahm signing, leading to a domino effect of other top players jumping for LIV?
Well, how long is this show? we could go for a long time on this. We're in the middle of a serious, serious crisis on the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour doesn't have the whole card because they're going to win. You don't beat the people with the most money. You don't in anything. I think our approach as we got into this thing initially was asked backwards. When you see Greg Norman and you see $700 billion behind it in a free fall, and Greg is, I mean, I've been with Greg. I was at his press conference at up in California when he had it for the World Tour. You want to do the World Tour? I think it was back in 92. And I just got off the board then, so I went to the meeting and I watched him and listened to him. And he said a couple other things, you know, with the President's Cup. He got that going because he loved the Ryder Cup, but they couldn't play in Australia. So he kind of pushed the tour towards that and got that. So then, you know that he wanted to, at some point, direct the tour or direct golf in a certain way that he thought would be better for everybody. So you combine Greg with $700 billion. When this thing first started to smolder, I would have paid great attention to it, and I probably would not have been as divisive as we were and made enemies right away. So anyway, that's where we are. We are with them poaching our players. We are with they don't have OWGR World Golf ranking points. We are now in meetings, secret meetings with Yasser and with Jay Monahan, and it's going to be done by the 31st. And I'm not sure Jay Monahan is going to last another week. We've got a board that is split. We have got outside capital, venture capitalists trying to get in to the tour in a for-profit situation. We're a nonprofit 501c6. We've got sponsors bailing out left and right because when they signed their TV contract from 2022 to 2030, and the tour getting $76 million a year, these contracts were best field available that they could get. The tour promised them a field. We got a lot of those guys going to live. And then all of a sudden, after the contract was signed, we came up with this thing called Elevated Tournaments to try to go against live and their tournaments, meaning the best players can play for the $20 million tournaments. The guys from 51 and down are going to play for $7 million tournaments. And now the embodiment of the tour are going, wait, hold on. How am I going to get in that Elite 50 where they're playing for 20 and I'm playing for 6? So you got divisiveness now. We have seen the petition signed by 26 players, players that are not, I think Ches Reavy is the highest player ranked. There was 111th. But what you have now is concerns for a union of representation because the administration is not representing the players in the way the administration was set up to be. You have got shit hitting the fan right now.
So how do you ultimately see this shaking out?
I see it ultimately shaking out that there is what Greg called 100 years ago World Tour. I see 10 to 14 tournaments played around the world, big tournaments that all tours are involved with, all tours. You get 7 votes on the World Golf Ranking, all 4 of us. I get the 7, and we've got the RNA, the USGA, the PGA, the PGA Tour, Asian Tour, and South American Tour. DP Tour is in 7. They have 7 votes. All those tours will supply the, let's say, those top tournaments, the top echelon. They're strategically put. You've got, let's say, 12 of them around the world. They're for $30 million. You got your four majors, so that'd be 16. And then those players then go back on those things, and they play at all their different tours, and they all have World Golf Ranking points, and they're all trying to get high enough now to get the top 75 to play in those huge tournaments that everybody's involved with. That is World Golf meshing together and not being fractionalized. And if we continue on this path of being fractionalized, you don't get the best players playing against the best players. And that is the crux. TV ratings are awful. They've always been awful. Tiger's kind of gone. He's the only one that moved the needle, the only one. John Rahm's great, fantastic. He ain't going to move any needle going to live. Tiger doesn't. So we have to act in unison as a force, especially with television rights and everything else, because if I'm a sponsor and I saw what the tour did to me in the last one, I'm not going to be so agreeable in the next.
Yeah.
So there's so much stuff going on. I don't know what's going to happen, but boy, they better start making friends.
Gary McCord joining us on Musings on Golf. Hey, Gary, let's go back to a couple of things you said earlier. The whole idea of how the tour handled it, you said ask backward. Do you put that at the feet of Jay Monahan, the commissioner, and the way he decided to handle it early on, the things he said that perhaps he should have looked at it and reacted in an entirely different way?
Yeah, I mean, it's real easy for me to sit here and do that. Hindsight is 2020. Again, guys, bottom line, it's real simple. Who's got the most money? Who's got it? You don't make them your enemy. I mean, I understand that, you know, obviously there's feelings, hard feelings on that, but you know, they took that and ran that and shoved it down everyone's throat. You just, yes, but it's basic economics. They're going to win if they are in, and you know, and under their new regime and everything, and he's got the this whole realignment for Saudi Arabia, for the youngsters in Saudi Arabia through sport, through everything, through $700 billion. You know, he's going to make this country bigger, brighter, and stronger. So you got to, you know, I probably would have sat down immediately with them. And again, this, for me, this is set. It's stupid because it's already happened. But you sit down and you talk to them. You know, you don't call them names on the other side. You sit there and talk to them. Where do you think you go with it? Blah, 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 blah. And see if they're is there. If their intent is there, with that bank account they got, okay, we better look at, you know, putting our arm around them and go, okay, well, let's do this together then. If you're that intent on going that direction and do what you got to do. We just got really far apart when we got divisive and we got confrontational. And I think that's why we are where we are now.
Mary, if this world tour concept that you talk about, and I think a lot of people feel that it will get to that point someday, if that does come to fruition, how do you feel about the team concept that's baked into that? Do you see that that is a has the potential to be successful if it's team concept, let's say based on four guys from a certain country, from certain countries? Can it work?
Yeah, the basic business plan is that, and it starts from the Ryder Cup. I mean, the Ryder Cup is the biggest team event in the world, and probably, and it is the most emotional the golfers get, tournament-wise, in the world. So you take that concept, and if you take that concept as a team, you can now treat that as an equity situation, where you can go form a team geographically, just what you said. You've got New Zealand playing Australia playing Asia. You've got them playing South America. So you put all this together and make a team concept for world golf. That could be on the side. I foresee LIV, my opinion, I see them getting rid of their stroke plan. I see them just going strictly to the team concept. That's what they want to do anyway. And then you just build equity, you create revenue streams. Right now, one of Rahm's deals, I heard Rahm got $566 million, a private airplane, Saudi airplane, and 10 people in that garage. I'd sound that too. So what Rahm is going to get 25% of his team, LME gets 75% of it. And now you go build equity and you build equity over the years, with these matches around the world, golf's global. I could see it. I can actually see that. Obviously, the tour guys can see that because this Tiger started DGL and yeah, started wearing microphones. So they're going to embrace that in a new high-tech venue. That's fine. They've got the idea, built teams, whether it be tech or whether it be, you know, hitting a golf ball out of nature. And so I can really see that. I can see it turn towards that direction. It makes sense. That makes sense because you've got all sorts of revenue streams going in. So that's a possibility, and it'll be here. It'll work in the long term.
Let's switch gears for a minute. And I know this was not exactly a highlight, but please, please retell the story of what happened to you at the 84 FedEx St. Jude in Memphis.
Okay, so this is 100 years ago, and this was Colonial Country Club. In Memphis, Tennessee, it is. And we're playing Memphis in July.
Yeah, really?
And it is Tarzan hot out there. And I'm at the pinnacle of my inability to hit a golf ball and get it in the hole. And it's just fascinating, the mental trauma that goes through. Anyway, so you're out practicing night and day, practicing I don't know what, but I was practicing. And the one thing you have a tendency to do, because in those days you really didn't have courtesy cars. We had one. If we were rich enough, you could get a rail car, and three or four guys would use the rail cars. you don't have access to anything. So you're staying at some way back hotel. You couldn't really stay at a nice hotel. And you had no access to washing your clothes. So you get to a certain point where it's a necessity or it's out and out, you better clean something. And I was at that point, and I'd gone, I think, 3 days without underwear. And that's flipping it, okay? So I was flipping it, because I was trying to find out. I had a forearm up in the air with a cut, right? And so I practiced. It was underwear. So anyway, I've got my underwear, and I've got these pants. And I can still remember these pants. They were cotton pants, and they were the plaid. They were just, you know, everything you could think about in plaid. They were just plaid, and they were kind of tight. And I get on the second hole, and I got about a 15-footer, looks like it's left to right. So I kind of squat down, you know, to do the, when I could squat down, squat down, and I heard a noise, and it started from the back of my rear end, at the top of my belt, and it started to explode, much like an earthquake bullets. And it went up and through and popped the zipper. And I'm sitting there now, and I just put my legs together, and I go, okay, it's a pretty easy problem. Just give me my rain gear. So I put my legs together. I told my cat, get over. He goes, I go, get the rain gear out of the bag. He goes, the rain gear is in my car, caddy parking, which is 12 miles away. But what? He said, Gary, it's 150 out here. We're not carrying rain gear. We're not carrying anything that got weight. Because this bag is heavy and it's 110. And I go, okay. So go see the other guy. The other two guys have got rain gear. Nothing. Now I got a problem. Now I can't actually putt unless I put my legs together, my knees together. But I got to go get a dish shot. That's not going to work. So I'm sitting there going, what am I going to do? And one of the guys I was playing with was Rod Curl, who was a Native American. He's a 100% Wintu Indian. And I was just kind of, you know, you guys got anything? And I went, huh, I watched enough John Wayne movies and stuff. And I went, well, I could do a loincloth kind of thing. So, and most like, can you get over here? Do you have a towel in there? He goes, yeah, we got one little towel. I said, perfect. You know, so I put it down in here and then put it down towards my knees. And then we had to get another towel. I had to borrow it. I don't know who the other guy was. Anyway, I borrowed his towel. So there I am. I got this. I have got two loincloths, one on my back and one on my front. And I get there and you go down to look at, now I got a look at the putt. And you just put your hand down there and keep it down and look at it. Okay, got it. You know, blah, blah, blah. And I got to the next tee shot. Now my golf swing was always, I was very close at the top and I was across the line. So I had to have a lot of knee slide going towards the target to make sure the club face got squared up and go, or I was going to hit a duck hook over here on a set field. Well, I couldn't do that with the loincloth. So I had to rotate. So anyway, we played and we get to the ninth tee, and my caddy goes, all right, stall a little bit. I'll go to the pro shop and get you some pants. And I shot, I think, 3 under the front. I said, I've gone all the way. This has really helped my golf swing. And I think I shot 68 or 69. I don't know when I shot. It was under par. It was pretty good with a loincloth on both sides. And I'm surprised that Jordan come out and find me or can bring them pair of pants. But that was it. That was a long time ago when there's not many people watched it, especially me and my yard. But that was the story. And then I did do my wash the next day.
I would certainly hope so. Hey, I've always found you to be a remarkable figure in golf. I mean, you know, you went to a Division II program, played at UC Riverside, more than 400 PGA Tour events without a win. And somehow Gary McCord lands this gig at CBS Sports. You really become, your own brand for a long, long time. How in the world did you land that spot on the most prestigious, you know, weekly broadcasts in golf with CBS Sports?
It was, Yeah, obviously years ago, 1980, it was 86. And I was on the tour policy board, okay, and was one of the four player directors. And we had, we were in Texas at the Colonial, and we were going to Jack's tournament near field. And I was not in the field because it was invitational. But I was there for 3 days for meetings, policy board meetings. So I get the airplane and I'm in 26C back by the John, and all the boys at CBS were in the front. First class, all of them. Summerall, Venturi, Ben Wright, Frank Chikinian, and I think Bob Murphy. So I walked through, they're hooting and hollering at me and everything, wherever you knew. So I go to the back. About halfway through the flight, I get a bottle of wine, and they had drank half of it. Okay, it was cork in it, and they had the flight attendant stewardess then come back, and she had the guys in first want you to at least have some wine while you're back here. So I went back to thank them. As I'm walking up, I'm going to be there through Wednesday, okay, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I had no money whatsoever. My next tournament's in Washington, D.C., the Kemper, and I'll arrest you. I can't go early, and I can't afford to go home. So I'm kind of stuck. And so I went up to Frank and, you know, thanked him and everything. I said, by the way, Frank, I said, I'm on the tour policy board. And he said, is there any chance I'm going to meetings right now, obviously. And is there any chance I could set in your truck and watch you do a telecast for as producer director? And I said, I'm making decisions, contracts at ESPN at that time, ABC, CBS, NBC about golf. I have no idea how to do it. Totally. I'd like to sit and watch. My whole deal was to get a free room. That was the whole deal. I asked him. He says, I said, all I need is a free room for the weekend. And I want to watch and view. All right. And since show up the Stouffer's. We're sent the Stouffer. Go to the Stouffer. You got a room on from then on. So perfect. It worked out great. I got a plate. You're always on the hustle. When you put it in the four iron up in the air with a little cut, you're always on the hustle. So I get there and he says, come out Friday to the truck. So I go out there. We got rehearsal on Friday. I get out there, get in the door, sit down. They said, yeah, sit behind Frank. And he's got 120 monitors up there. And he's sitting there and he's cruising and directing at the same time, which is amazing. He's got cameras flying everywhere and everything. And so he says, McCourt's here. And he goes, tell him to go out to 16. And I'm right behind Frank. And he's got the headsets on. I said, Frank, I want to watch this. I did what? Tell him to go out. He turned around and said, get out to 16. The hell am I going out to 16 for? So I start walking, slump-shouldered out to 16. I got kicked out of the truck. So I go walking out. And I think now I'm going to watch me to be a spotter. And the spotter is a guy that's missed it. So he goes on the tee to par 16, puts the headphones on. He watches Brady Couples and Joe LaCava talking about getting a 7-iron. They finally pull a 7-iron, and I go on the thing, 7-iron. That goes to the trucks. That goes up to the guys in the booth, and they go, oh, we're getting the 7-iron, blah, blah, blah. I get halfway there, and Bert Lundquist is up in the tower. And he goes, get up here. I said, all right. He says, no, get up here. So I walk up. And then he hands me a headset. Like, what's this? And he goes, Frank wants to try his announcer. What? What? So he said, yeah, here, there's a folding chair. They pull out a folding chair. So I'm between Vern Lundquist and his desk. And he has got a guy there named Carl Schlichter. He was the information guy for John Madden, okay, all those years. Awesome. Carl Schlichter. John Madden could have fit inside of Carl Schlichter. Carl Schlichter was 420 pounds.
Wow.
And he was sitting there on a Kmart folding chair that couldn't have cost more than $5. In those days, we didn't have the nice chairs. And I remember I got one of the chairs and I sat there and I'm right next to the camera on my lap. And then I've got Vern Lundquist and then I got Carl Schlichter over there. And I'm fascinated. The only thing I'm fascinated by is that chair. And I'm just sitting there looking at it because that chair is going to bust. And this is going to be an awful situation. Anyway, we start and we get into this, the deal. And we're not there for 5 minutes. and something's wrong with the cameras, and Frank just calls out the rehearsal. Calls it up. All right, everybody, I can't get these cameras working. We'll figure it out. He says, I want you guys here at, when the show started at 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, be there. Now, Frank says 12 o'clock for rehearsal. You got to be there at 1:45. Okay, you got to be there. So I got there early and everything. So I get up there with Berman. I'm on national television. I no clue. The only thing I know is I know Pat Summerall's voice from those commercials he did for the hardware store. Remember? And I did Ace. That's it. Ace Hardware. Ace Hardware thing. I think you're right. Yeah. And I'm sitting there and I get, that's all I know. I know that voice. And I'm one with Burr on 16. So anyway, we're going along, And I studied like hell the night before. I don't know what to do. And I learned real quick, boy, you've got to get in and get out and hurry. There's no storytelling like I'm doing now. It's getting get out because the golf's very slow, but there's a lot of balls in the air. Okay. And they're cutting back and forth, so you can't get stuck. So I got the flow. Finally, we get to a point, and and somebody takes a commercial break. So we get in commercial break, and I sit back and I start reading paper. Read some more articles and stuff. The voice coming up, and all of a sudden they go, "Okay, now let's go to 16." So I'm sitting now. I'm on 16. I can see the 15th green, the 14th green to my right. Really short, nice hole, right over there. You can see it. And then 15 is part five, wanders up to the trees. There's a starters group, and the guys that were on the green just left the green below me, and the next group, because they had the starters, and they were on 14 green. At Silverado comes on, okay, here we go, let's go down to 16, right? Gary, this putt looks really, really fast here. What do you think? I'm sitting there reading a paper, and I put down the paper, and I look, there's nobody. Honey, those guys are gone. There's nobody on the next two holes. And I look down. Now I think real quick, and I think, okay, they got a rookie up here who doesn't know what he's doing. They're still in commercial break, but they're pretending like there's a golf tournament. Okay. So I start for the paper, and Byrne goes, Garrett. And I look at him, and Byrne's got that Nordic sweat going, like, okay, I need an answer here. And then, like, screaming at me, this is, you stupid idiot, say something. So I said, well, Bert, I said, this putt here, thinking that we're still on the work, right? This putt here is going to be really fast because it's coming off that shelf down towards the water. And if he hits it too hard, his ball could leak in down the French, could go over water. Well, at that time at 16, there's no water. The only water was a drinking fountain back on the 16th tee before Jack redid it for a lake. There's no water. So if there goes for Rob Vino, it's for all that. And Byrne goes, and also there's quiet. I said, oh, wow. He said, you're right. That ball just about went into the water. Right? It's resting my fringe. Exactly what you said. Great call. I was like, what? So all of a sudden he turns and he throws it to Pat. And I take my headset off and I go, Byrne. And I'm hitting. I said, Byrne, what the hell are you talking about? He goes, what? I go, there's nobody down there. There's nobody, honey. There's no water. What? And then all of a sudden, he got that, that starry-eyed look. And he goes, oh, shit. I go, what? He goes, now remember, the cameras went out rehearsal. They told me I'm going to 16. I thought that was it. We got four other holes. They never told me. Never. Well, the 16th hole. Yeah. I don't know where they are. So we just happened to be on the 12th hole, par three, sitting right on the water. You remember that beautiful hole that sets back in there? Taylor's in front. And I don't know who it was. It might have been Dean Stewart. I was on the top. And, that slow, right down like that through the ball, with the fringe. So I got done and I went, what? He says, yeah, we have the front end, we got three, we got six, we got nine, we got 12, we got six. Well, nobody told me that. He goes, yeah, rehearsal, we didn't. Oh, God, I'm sorry. Okay, all right. So I sat back and I went, wow. I said, now this is a job for me. I just made up a bunch of bullshit, and it was actually true. and I might get paid for this. And that's the exact truth. And I went, okay, fine. And the reason I went the next week, okay, so I got that done and, you know, Frank, whenever. I got to go play. And then Frank calls me in after the show. He says, McCourt, get in here. So I, I'm going to get in trouble for something. I haven't done it. I don't think. Gets in, he goes, well, let me go back for a sec. The reason he called me in, Vern, is we're on the 14th hole, or the 16th hole. Anyway, the green sits there, and behind the green is a hill and a lot of long grass. And these greens literally were the speed of linoleum. And there's a big bumper in front of the hole then. And somebody got up there, was trying to hit a wedge. Bird goes, Gary, what's he got? I said, where is Great Scott? I said, everybody out there right now, grab your wedge, hit a ball, go up to your front one, chip the ball on your driveway and start hauling forth the bike. That's what he's got. So I did that, and Vern winks at me like, good. And I get in, and Frank called me in, and he goes, what are you doing next week? I go, well, I'm going to go play in Washington at the Temperate. All righty, good, he says. So when you miss the cut, come up on the weekend, and we'll put you with Bert. What? What do you mean, miss?
Well, you know, when you miss the cut, right?
So that was it. I did that for 3 years. I did that for 3 years. CBS, 500 a weekend I got. Five, so I'd go check into their hotel. I'd go play. And if I made the cut, when I got done, I was never in the last couple of groups, so they'd run me up to the tower, and I'd go do that, or I missed the cut, I'd go do that. So then I finally give it one of these after 3 years. I go, that's okay. I either did a contract, but I'm going to go back to play. I did not have a very good bluff position when I said, I'll go back to play, because they would go, really? You're going to go back to play? So anyway, not in a good power position for negotiations, much like the tour is right now with Liv.
That's great stuff.
All right, Gary, I don't think anybody that ever lived had been adversely affected by just four words. Those words, bikini waxed and body bags. Did you have any idea whatsoever when you made those comments about the greens at Augusta National, that Augusta National itself would react in the fashion that they did?
That's a long, long, long story from a long time ago. What happened was, I got to Augusta in 1986. Frank Trukanian took Jim Nance and I in to see Ort Hardin down to the catacombs underneath, because we were newbies. We were starting there. And he was going to dictate the policy of Augusta National and television. And he did. And again, I'm Southern California, I'm a smart ass. And it was like talking to the principal. And I, at that point, I went, okay. No, it was in 86. I said, everybody kind of kowtows and everybody's definitely afraid to go. They're going to do a broadcast of what they're going to say. So I just see what I could say and just see how far I could push the envelope. I remember a couple times I baited them. I was on 14th hole. They put the guys that just started at 14, which is your power is up in the trees over the side of Monday. And you don't, the hole's got nothing going. So one day it's downwind and the pin's packed right. And there's a little shelf over there, put the pin in the right. And the ball, one hopping up in the, into the side of the hill with all the people set. So I went, okay, what's this? So the guy hits the next one and gets on the green and it just, boom. And I go, well, there goes another one of the cheap seats. two, and Trukanian just busted my ear. There are no cheap seats there. And he goes, what are you doing? I can't do that. And again, in golf, we were talking about the body bags. In golf, you get cliches playing everywhere. And I was not ever one with a cliche. So I would sit there, and if you had a term you use, I would try to write it 50 different ways. So the big thing in golf was, oh, he's hit it left over there, he's dead. Oh, no, he's hit the trees now, down on that hill, he's dead. So I sat there, I wrote 50 things on he's dead. Got a tag on his toe, he's on the slab, he's in the morgue, he's in a body bag. And all I did was just interject those, and the guy hit the crap, and he had nothing. Instead of saying dead, you write, you just do it, take the cliche and take it out and rewrite it. That's simple. This takes a little work, and you stay fresh that way. You stay on top of it. And so that was the body bags over on 17, in or on 17, and you can't get it up and down from there. And so I just said, and I've used that 100 times before. Oh, he's no, it's not good. It'll be a body bag. Meaning he's dead. And then the bikini wax thing was on 17. I was on 17. It was a Sunday. And when you got Sunday, you write all year. You write stuff. And then you circle the stuff that's really good. And if it's really good, you put a circle around it and a star. And that's what I did. And that means you can use it for Augusta, especially Sunday afternoon. It's a good stuff. I really didn't have anything. And Jose Maria Olazabal hit a putt down in the front left, then it was back right. He had a hopty dumpty up and around. He couldn't get it within 8 feet. So we go to a commercial break, and they sit there. And to incite my riot here at all times, this is before computers, I had magazines, not a magazine, of every ilk, from Mad Magazine to Scientific American to Discovery to whatever. And I would just go through them in commercial break. And when you go through it, it splashes words in your head. It's just what words, just everywhere. You're just trying to get the words, and then we're back in a commercial break. But when I was looking at, it was People Magazine, I was looking, and what caught my attention was an article from Escondido, California. I lived in Escondido, California, down by San Diego. And there's a very famous woman's father named the Golden Door. And a very famous woman. And very expensive. And they had a menu of things you do at the Golden Door. Like cucumber eye patches and lettuce wraps and bikini waxes. And I went, bikini wax. Now, we're not on the air yet. We're not in a commercial. Bikini wax. Fast. Good. It's another way to, not to say this butt is fast, right? Just another euphemism we're going to use. So he goes back on, he's got this butt. And I said, the one thing about Augusta is at the end here, these guys' nerves are frayed, and they're trying to putt in these greens that are 15 on step meter, and they got something sliding downhill. It's just about impossible to figure out the speed. In fact, I don't think they mold these greens. I think they bikini wax. Hey, my euphemism for being fast. And that was it. And then 3 days later, I was kind of out. Brent called me in his office. He goes, okay. And I did those guys at that club at that point were sold. I didn't think any of them knew what a bikini wax was. So I was out. And I probably actually, in hindsight, helped my career more than anything. Once you get out of the realm of golf, I remember I had to go. I was on the Tonight Show of Jay Leno. George Clooney and I were sitting with George Clooney going, are you kidding me? I say bikini wax. I'm sitting there on national television with Jay Leno and bikini wax and George Clooney. That was funny. So once you cross over, then you kind of, it's like John Daly. It's just you cross over and you're, all of a sudden, new doors open up and stuff like that. And my screw up kind of just helped accelerate the career.
The final question for me, for our great guest, Gary McCord, and it's kind of a two-parter. What do you think when you watch CBS Sports coverage of golf today? And the second part, were you surprised that Paul Azinger was not invited back to be in the tower at 18 for NBC Sports coverage of golf?
I knew what NBC was doing. Got it? When we were in a ball being coat, okay, I saw the same parallels. NBC is a little different situation now. NBC is, in my opinion, other way of cutting everything down to the basics. Because we talked about the contract with CBS, NBC, and the tour. The Golf Channel analogies, you know, was cut out a lot. Their producers, everything. They are on the way to make a skeleton crew because of probably what the tour has done to them as far as elevated tournaments. If CBS or NBC doesn't get an elevated tournament, you're showing these other tournaments, great tournaments, but, you know, for $7 million, and those guys that are playing the elevated, they're not going to play in them. Now you've also got a lot of guys that live. What you feel? Feels nothing. It's a Corn Ferry event. Okay? Not to Corn Ferry tour event. It's a Corn Ferry event. So,
hey, Gary, but I mean, we saw that. I live in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. We saw it at the Honda Classic last year.
I'm terrible. I kept asking. I got buddies that are sponsoring them. What are you guys doing? I remember talking to a three or four of them. What are you guys doing? You guys negotiate a contract. Best field available. Okay, fine. Boom, we're in. Here we go. We supply the tour with a lot of cash. Go look at the number for the meteorite. And then all of a sudden, number one, half the guys are running to the other side. Can't get down. Then I kind of come up with elevated events to offset that. And now I don't get an elevated event. Wait a minute. Now, hold it. I'm best field available. What's going on here, guys? I put a lot of money in. The tour didn't come back with, you know, any reimbursement, any kind of, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. You know, blah, 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 blah. Okay. If I'm a sponsor, I'm pissed. And that next contract negotiation is not going to be as friendly as the last one. Okay. So NBC, maybe they saw that. CBS, they'll see that. Everybody's going to see that. And they're going to start cutting. They're going to make this golf gets zero ratings. And the only rating they get is Tigers. If you start deleting these guys and put them in other tours around the world, and you can't see them, and you can't see Rom playing Shuffler, blah, blah, blah. Dudes, what are you doing? We got to fight this as one unit, our unit that's both golf. Okay? Mm-hmm. Get together and do this. So I think NBC sees the writing on the wall. And I've talked to a lot of guys at NBC, and I think they're cutting. We're going to get down to bare minimum. But you can't exist in this world paying those rights fees for a 2-0 rating. You can't. Can't do it. It's impossible. So,
someone who had been at CBS for so long, when you watch, take away the finances of it, just the way CBS presents golf now versus when you were there, what do you see?
Well, I remember the meeting, exactly. Faraday and I were sitting in the back of the meeting. We're in New York. And they're talking about the graphics that are coming. And the graphics are from Shotley, PGA Tour, Revenue Stream. They're going to put in Shotley, and they are going to fill everybody with stats, and then you're going to sell those stats on the internet. And you can get it in a bundle of luck, but you're going to buy this for X. And we're going to have another revenue stream. Well, when you got stats, you've got graphics on television and data. I remember we said, you know, we're going to be looking at television, and we're going to have to read the graphics, because if someone comes up and you're an announcer on the graphics in the lower third, meaning the lower third part of the deal, call it, you get to read them. You don't assume they're reading them at all, and you get yelled at to read the graphics. So at that point, that was 2000. You have to look it up when Shotlight came in. 2000, they did it, 13, 14, something around there.
Yeah.
We knew now that we're going to be nothing but graphic readers. You got television, you know, a golf. It goes fast for a slow sport. It's jumping balls in the air, especially when Sunday, somebody's trying to win. Saturday, not so much. You can follow Tigers there, follow Tiger. That's going to fall, right? On Sunday, You got a movie. You got a start. You got a middle, and you got a finish. So now all of a sudden, you got balls in the air, and you're reading Bradley's and you're going fast or slow, we're just there to say, let's go to 15. 37% of the time, he loses his putt to right when the wind's blowing from the north and the sun is at a 1 o'clock position. What? That's it. That's what Tory does now. They retract it. So the patinage back and forth between the players, I give you one instance. Ian Becker Finch came over and made me sick. And I don't know, early in his career, and one of my dear buddies, great guy, fantastic. And he's on the air and I'm bored up in the car doing something. And he starts in on something and I hit the button. I totally disagree. I said, I can't believe you think that he can do that, but that it's not going to do blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Done. Go back in and we go back to the trucks. And Ian goes, can I talk to you? I said, sure. So we go outside. I said, what do you got? And he goes, what was that all about? I said, what? He said, you jumped my ass on 15 about. Oh, yeah. I said, yeah, you were dead right. He goes, what? I said, well, this is television. This is entertainment. No one wants to hear guys agreeing. Oh, you're right, Bob. Great, right. That's right. You're really good. They want to hear confrontation. Because the guys on the couch, usually watching golf, we're flying through football and baseball. But if you got two guys arguing, you take a sign. You take a sign mentally. Well, bullshit. He's right, he's wrong. So what are they going to do? They're going to say, wait till you get done. So I told Ian, I said, Ian, I just did it to get confrontation. What do you mean? I go, we got to go back and forth. Even if you don't agree, you got to make it entertaining. We're on television, okay? And it's golf. It's cool. So, and he understood, and then he got it. But we didn't do that. He's Jack of years. Be ready, you know, be on top. So that's it. If there's no energy, no nothing, get somebody riled up, you know, and you're telling, I used to do it bed right, but then I ended up with Barry, and they, the point CBS got it. With Ben Wright, remember, I used to jump him. I'm from Southern Cal. He is from England. He writes for the London Financial Times. He's brilliant. I'm an idiot. He jumped me words I never heard before. I go, what the hell is that? And we go back and forth. It got to the point. CBS would not let Ben and I on the same show. And I go, what's going on? And one day, I remember at Hartford, we're sitting there and Frank's up and it's a Friday at its cables. And Ben said something and I didn't, and Frank hit, there's an alt key button and there's a button for that specific tower. And he hit my button and he says, cut his throat. And I kind of woke up, that means go get it. And Frank would do that because CBS had told him, I want those two guys together. They argued too much back and forth. And Frank finally said, screw it. This is television. This is fun stuff. So that's when I got the okay to start. And once I started, like with Ben and with David and doing that, it's pretty simple. You don't agree, you disagree. And the fun is in the disagreement. And that's my opinion of how do you do golf on television.
All right, Gary, let's go from the simple to the complex. Your thoughts on this golf ball rollback?
Won't happen. Won't happen. What chance? It doesn't benefit anybody. Again, this is a long, long answer. The golf ball goes far for 0.003% of the golfing population. And if you're telling the other day I went to the club, I'm like, hey, everybody here in the grove, anybody here think they hit it too far? Raise your hand. Right?
No.
Well, not a chance. But we got 37 tour pros at the place we play. 37 tour pros. And so, of course, they hit it too far. Playing with them all the time. They hit it too far. So why are you penalizing the guys that don't hit it far? I guess the guys you see on television, 0.003% of the golfing population, and you're going to slow the ball down for everybody. First of all, common sense, that doesn't make sense. Jack is pushing it for one reason. He builds golf courses. And Augusta is against it for one reason. They've run out of land. Okay? They've run out of, they can't find any more land around the golf course to expand on. So they're bit with the thing that, okay, golf ball goes too far. Yeah, it does for those guys. Then for me, I just play the tournament. They're out hitting me by 70 yards. Let's go far. So common sense tells me there'll be some sort of bifurcation. Bifurcation's going to come at a cost. If the tour bifurcates and slows the ball down, all the manufacturers will sue their ass. PGA Tour has got assets. They have got pension plans. They have got golf courses. They have got all sorts of things. They will sue our ass because what is Titus going to do or TaylorMade when they advertise? And I think guys, about 60% of the advertising on golf, yes, golf OEMs or golf manufacturing companies. So are you going to go on the air now and go, oh, yeah, we've got a ball that goes short, go on down and buy it, and a driver doesn't go as far with that ball? How are they going to sell anything? They're not. So they're going to go, the tour is scared to death of another lawsuit. You saw what they spent last year. They spent $20 million in legal fees. $20 million. That's up from $2 million. Tenfold they spent. They don't want any more losses. So they've got that side of the bifurcation. If the tour does it, the tour is open to lawsuits. If the USGA does it and the RNA, they don't have any money. They got nothing. You're going to sue a big warehouse. So that's it. So there's your, in a short answer, there's your reason. So figure that one out.
Gary McCord, we've had a lot of interesting and entertaining guests on Musings on Golf. But I got to tell you, my friend, you're right up there near the top. I enjoyed every minute of this interview, and I know Kelly Elbin certainly did. So big thank you for being on Musings on Golf.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. You guys take care and happy holiday.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deerskin and suede with a soft gel insert. And the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And they are so incredibly comfortable. I invite you to head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best and play your best with William & Harry. Boy, Bob, I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Gary as much as you and I did. I miss him on TV. I think I've said this before. I really do. I know he and Peter Costas have their own podcast, and I know that they enjoy it. But it's, you know, a little bit of a void not to have him on a regular basis on TV.
Well, he's an entertainer, and I enjoyed that. And I'm going to give a little strange tease to our guest next week, Mark Calcavecchia and Pedicure. Mark Calcavecchia and Pedicure. Tune in next week to Musings on Golf. You'll find out exactly what I'm talking about.
There's nothing more I can add. Kelly Elbin for Bob Bupka signing off. Musings on Golf.